6 hour of the Jason Rand Show, brought to you by our friends over at Robbins & Company Structural Moving and Foundation Repair. Lots of news happening all around the world and right here at home. Producer Darren, let's find out what's trending.
What's trending in Trumplandia?
So, Senator John McCain is dying, but it's not stopping him from actually getting involved and commenting on things that are happening right now in the Senate. Important things like the confirmation hearings for Gina Haspel, who is hoping to become the next CIA director. This would be the first time a woman was put in this position, so it's a potentially historic confirmation that's about to happen. But Senator McCain says that she should not be the CIA director for one reason and one reason only. He doesn't say she's not a patriot, quite the opposite. He acknowledges she is a patriot who has fought hard on behalf of the security of this country. But he argues because she wouldn't call torture that happened a decade ago immoral when pushed upon by Senator Kamala Harris, that she has been disqualified from serving. That's his view. Now, the reason, of course, and we played the audio yesterday, I'm not going to do it again because it's like 2 minutes long. The reason why Gina Haspel would not call about a decade-old incident immoral is because it was a trick question. If she says, yes, it was immoral, then all Kamala Harris and Democrats have to do is say, well, why would we want someone who has a questionable immoral past leading the CIA? You now think it was immoral. At the time, you still did it. So what's to stop you from doing it again this time around and then only after the fact claim that it's immoral? So that would be a lose for her. Now, what if she said, no, I don't think it was immoral? Well, that's also a lose, because if that wasn't immoral then, that means you're just going to do it now. You're going to be waterboarding everybody now. So it's a lose-lose for her. And Gina Haspel was correct in not answering that question directly. But unfortunately, now it means that Senator John McCain, who... if we want to be fair about things, because he's talking about disqualifying, if you yourself have been tortured, that might disqualify you because of your bias. It's an understandable bias, right? No one is going to say, John McCain, you haven't earned the right to take these positions on something you've experienced, although it's a different kind of quote-unquote torture, because I don't necessarily view waterboarding the same way as what John McCain had to go through, had to endure. So I don't know if he should be commenting on this if we're talking about bias, but he did. And so now as a result, there's a little bit of a row in the White House coming from someone no one has ever heard of because of a quote-unquote joke she said at a meeting. I don't know if it's a joke per se. That's how they're qualifying this. It's the special assistant Kelly Sadler, who generally has been focusing on immigration reform. She, according to The Hill, made a joke saying, quote, it doesn't matter, he's dying anyway, in response to this idea that McCain has come out against Haspel. Now, that doesn't sound like a joke. It just sounds like a callous way of offering a political opinion, I guess. But, it was a stupid comment. The White House isn't denying that the statement was made. And by the way, the source that they're using over at The Hill said the entire room was uncomfortable with that comment, and they just kind of moved on. But everyone was clearly, they said, showed discomfort in the room when that comment was made. So it's not like anyone was there like, ha, that's really funny. It was one comment by one person no one has heard of outside of the people who work in Washington. Cindy McCain, the wife of Senator McCain, took to Twitter saying, may I remind you, my husband has a family, 7 children and 5 grandchildren. There's no one out there who's defending this statement. It was callous. It was wrong. And we can move on because it's not going to impact anything. And the truth is, he is dying. And the truth is, the White House does have to deal with that. Not in the sense that he's not going to be around to vote to confirm Gina Haspel, but I do think there is some concern, or there should be some concern, that a guy who's a hero, right? Everyone says that about John McCain, who's well-respected in Washington, there's no doubt about that, who has friends on both sides of the aisle, taking a position, do people want to necessarily say the position of a dying hero should be ignored? I think that this poses a little bit of a problem for the White House. And unfortunately, you've got some other people who are putting gasoline on this fire You've got former Fox News military analyst Thomas McInerney. He was on Fox Business's Charles Payne, who, by the way, is a veteran. His son is also a veteran. He made this comment about Senator McCain and this rumored nickname.
Well, she can't use it anymore because it's we've determined the Congress that it's not legal. The fact is John McCain, it worked on John. That's why they call him Songbird John. The fact is you those methods can work, and they're effective, as former Vice President Cheney said. And if we have to use them to save a million American lives, we will do whatever we have to.
I don't know. I've not heard McCain be called Songbird John. I've not heard that. Is that widely used?
It came up in 2008, and I think it was mostly debunked.
Yeah. But that's the key. It was debunked. Because the statement that he just made is demonstrably untrue. There's no evidence to suggest whatsoever that he was a songbird, that actual torture worked on John McCain. Quite the opposite. When he was being tortured and they were asked to give up names, he gave the names of, like, the running back for the Packers at the time. Like, he was just giving out random sports people's names and saying, they're members of my platoon. And so there's no evidence to suggest that he did, in fact, decide to sing. And Charles Payne, for his part, he's apologized on Twitter. He says, I regret I did not catch this remark as it should have been challenged. He says there was someone in his ear at the time telling him to wrap up the interview. Something I 100% believe. Like, when you're doing TV or radio, they're in your ear a lot. And there are times, especially on the radio, where someone's talking, I'm pulling something up on my out of my notes, and I'm not paying that close attention to every single word. So I'm not going to give Charles Payne a hard time on this. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending in Seattle?
Speaking of not giving people too hard of a time, we found out that the Seattle Police Department admits that they were not ready for the TP protest that happened earlier in the week, where, yet again, environmental lunatics decided to take to the streets, Second Avenue, go outside of a Chase Bank, and just shut down the traffic in the downtown Seattle area for hours. Here's SPD Lieutenant Scott Moss talking with Como TV.
And we had no idea that was going to take place, so we simply reacted to what that we were confronted with. And at that time that it occurred, we didn't have the number of resources needed to stop them from getting their stuff in place. It was very clear that they practice. It's something that they practice and they have been working on. We had people that clearly were set on being arrested yesterday.
Okay, so here's the deal. I look at what happened in Seattle at this protest, and I don't blame the SPD for not being ready for this particular protest, right? Like, I could go out in the street right now and start a protest. Jacob wouldn't go because he's a sellout, but I'll bring Darren. He would come with me. Hannah in the newsroom, she'd come out with me. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to. You can videotape.
All right.
You can put it on, you can Facebook Live it.
Okay.
But we would go ahead and we would protest. I don't expect the SPD knows that I'm about to do that. And I could have been planning behind the scenes for months and they would have no idea. The problem is, once the protest actually starts, are you ready to deal with it and get those people off of the streets? Because for a very long time now, we have seen these types of protesters take to the streets and block traffic. So you have to have an actual plan. And the plan cannot simply be, well, let's politely ask these people to leave, because they're not going to leave. The plan can't simply be, well, we're going to arrest you if you don't leave, because per his own comment, they show up wanting to be arrested. These are people who think that they're going to be martyrs for a cause, only to a degree, of course. They're going to do very low-level martyrdom. They'll go to jail for a couple hours, and then they'll post bail and get out. They'll never actually do any sort of time. They're certainly not putting their actual lives on the line as a result of their passions here. So you know that that's what they're going to do. So why are we wasting so much time in dealing with them? They set up a protest that's illegal in the middle of the street. You take them down immediately, very simply. And by the way, when you get Seattle Fire Department to come out there and take them down from their little teepees, don't charge me. Send that bill to them. Send the bill to the dude who decided to put up that teepee and stand up there requiring the fire department to show up and have to remove them forcibly. I shouldn't have to pay for that.
We're doing the best we can in our responses, and we try to get them out as quickly as possible. But again, safety is always our number one priority.
Okay. Yeah, what's going to happen if they fall from a teepee that's 4 foot five. They're going to be fine, okay? And you know what? If something happens to them, then they can actually claim the martyrdom that they're so happy, that they're so happy to put on their own backs. What are we going to protest when we go out there? Any ideas, Darren?
City council?
Yeah. Jacob, get you your phone plugged in?
No,
you don't get a say.
Oh,
you're the sellout. Okay. You're the one who has to film it, though.
I don't get to.
Begrudgingly film it, and then just under his breath as he's doing play-by-play. Oh, there's Jason, Darren, and Hannah. They're forming a human fence. Arms interlocked. Jason is now trying to kill himself in the middle, just not having anything to do with the council. He's just really depressed. They're just, things have not been going well for him. Facebook, don't forget to hit the like button. By the way, if you want to follow us as we protest on the streets of Seattle, we're just going to go outside during the break for a few minutes. Facebook.com/Jason Rants Show. Welcome back to the Jason Rants Show on AM 770 KTTH. Shout out to our friends listening on 94.5 FM. In the greater east side, including Bellevue and Kirkland and Mercer Island. It is Friday. You know what that means? I get to talk movies. And there are two notable releases this weekend with a couple obvious themes for the weekend. Moms, it is Mother's Day this weekend, so two studios decided to release two films focusing on mothers. The first one is Melissa McCarthy's new movie, Life of the Party. It stars McCarthy as Deanna, who, on the day she drops off her daughter for her senior year at college, her husband tells her, yeah, he wants a divorce. So needing to start her life over again, seemingly, in the middle of her life, she decides to finally go back to college to finish what she never was able to. And of course, that college she decides to go to is the school her daughter does.
23 years of marriage just down the tubes. Oh, what am I going to do? I'm a 40-something-year-old woman that doesn't even have her degree. Oh, my God. I know what I'm going to do. Let me see you. I don't regret staying at home and being your mom, but I regret not getting my degree.
That's why somebody's mom just enrolled in college. Beep, beep, beep. It's me.
Life of the Party's greatest strength is also its greatest weakness. This is an inoffensive comedy. You're not going to remember this movie in a week, and it doesn't really push any new boundaries, which is what we love about Melissa McCarthy. She does that in so many of her movies. This case, she does not. This is a standard formulaic comedy, but the thing is, it does that formula really, really well. And I was looking at this movie, and I was talking to a friend who went with me, and we both kind of turned to each other like, this is kind of adorable. This is a movie, a comedy, that has actual heart. McCarthy is funny in her role, and you kind of expect that. Her best friend, played by Maya Rudolph of SNL fame, is a total blast. Is Life of the Party predictable? Yes, it is incredibly predictable. I knew almost everything that was going to happen before it happened. But it's also really charming, and it's also deeply likable. You're not going to laugh out loud for crazy, like a crazy person for 90 minutes straight. That's just not going to happen with this movie, but you will have a lot of fun. And sometimes, yeah, that's all you need. This is a good movie, particularly for daughters and their mothers, but it is a mainstream comedy. It's not necessarily Mother's Day themed. It just happens to star a mother. Life of the Party is out now. It's PG-13. And I do recommend it. A film I don't recommend is the second notable release of the weekend. It's called Breaking In, starring Gabrielle Union. Her character's dad was murdered by a group of thugs who want to steal the money. He's locked away in a vault at his home on this isolated estate in Wisconsin. But when they show up to steal the money, they didn't quite expect to find Union and her two young kids there, who they end up holding hostage. Union, of course, is a strong mother. She'll stop at nothing until she rescues her kids.
There she is. Gotta say, I didn't think you'd make it this far.
Yeah, you and everybody else.
Listen, Sean. I want to end this as much as you do.
Great. You tell my children to come outside. You don't touch them. We'll walk into the woods and you don't follow. When we're in the clear, I'll let them go.
How do I know I can trust you?
You don't. But you know you'll do whatever you have to do. Because there's nothing else you can do. You're a man at the mercy of a woman whose greatest weakness has a saw to his throat.
Ew. This movie is uninspired. It is formulaic, but unlike Life of the Party, this one is just kind of lazy. It lazily goes through the motions with a supporting cast that is just laughably bad. There are a ton of plot holes in this film that become incredibly distracting. And the thing is, it starts out rather promising. I think there's suspense for the first few minutes of the film when you know they're walking into a house that's been broken into, because the name of the movie is called Breaking In. That part was actually really good. The problem is it only lasted a few minutes, because once the kidnapping actually happens, it just weirdly gets dull and unbelievable. This mom, who has no training whatsoever, somehow is able to stand up to people repeatedly punching her in the face. Like, she just happens to be this super strong mom, but they don't explain exactly how or why. Other than, well, she'll do anything for her kids. Yeah, but you know, at some point, if you get punched in the face repeatedly by a dude who's got like 50 pounds of muscle on you, you're probably not going to be able to save your kids. What was a distracting part of this movie is it was clearly dubbed over some parts, because you can see the person on screen using the F word, but then they switch it. They dub over it, presumably to maintain a PG-13 rating. There's nothing in this movie that should deem it R, including, by the way, the language if they allowed it. But I wish it had the highest rating possible, the most restrictive rating possible, just to save some of you who might accidentally see this movie thinking it might be a good suspense. It is not. Breaking In does Gabrielle Union no justice whatsoever, because I really, really like her. This is just a bad movie, and I don't recommend it. Tell me what movie you're going to see this weekend. Send me a text on the None Better Tax Resolution Hotline. 1-800-465-8770. That's 1-800-465-8770. Tell me what movies you plan on going to this weekend. You're listening to The Jason Rantz Show. We're back at the bottom of the hour. Welcome back to the Jason Rantz Show on AM 770 KTTH and 94.5 FM in the Greater East Side. Should the state follow in the footsteps of King County in paying postage for mail-in ballots every single election cycle? Republican State Senator Joe Fain says, yeah, they absolutely should. He represents the 47th Legislative District that includes cities like Auburn, Renton, Kent, and Federal Way. And he joins me now. Good morning. Thank you so much for coming on.
Hey, Jason. Thanks for your interest in this issue.
So, on the surface, I support it in that I know that it's going to be more convenient for me, and I always struggle to find a stamp because I never have one, and then I end up stealing one from the office and the front desk lady, and then she gets mad at me. And so I like this idea. I don't, however, buy this thought that it's going to make a meaningful dent in voter participation rates. I don't think stamps are the barrier. I think apathy is. Tell me where you think I might be wrong.
Well, I don't think you're as wrong as you might think I think you are, in that, yeah, there are a whole lot of reasons why folks aren't voting right now. And the idea that a stamp is that fundamental barrier that's keeping someone from participating, well, you're right. It's just not true. But we have seen evidence when there's been pilot programs that have been done in Shoreline and in Maple Valley, I believe, where you did see as much as a 10% bump in the voter turnout because of the prepaid stamp. But for me, it's important to increase turnout. We want to lower barriers, but I'm all about making government just easier to use. And this particular proposal ends up probably being cheaper. It makes it equal across the state, so we aren't advantaging more affluent areas. And it also just makes something, as you said, hunting around looking for stamps. A lot of us just don't have stamps in our house anymore. We do everything electronically. And so we want to make it as easy as possible.
Now, the projected cost, the last numbers I saw, were something around $3 million per election cycle. How did they come up with that calculation, and why might that be cheaper than what we do now?
So what we do now isn't just about having these mail-in ballots. What we also have is over 400 drop boxes all over the state. And these drop boxes need to be manned by elections professionals. They need to be changed cleaned out several times a day. And then on actual 8 p.m. on election night, there needs to be elections professionals, elections paid government employees standing there at 8 p.m. to be able to shut them down so that they are no longer accepting ballots after 8 p.m. That's an extraordinary operating cost. And while we still want to maintain some of these drop boxes around the state because some folks at the last minute haven't been able to get their ballot in the mail, the idea that we'll need quite as many as we currently use, we just won't need them. Most people will be doing what most people already do, which is throw in their ballot in a mailbox. this proposal makes it so that every little blue post office box on the street corner is a secure mail drop box and at a fraction of the cost.
Now, is the 3 million, is that based on the amount of registered voters and just assuming that they would use this service? Because, again, because I don't think it would have a meaningful impact on the voter turnout, it seems like, is there a way to charge only if it gets used?
Well, it only does charge if it gets used. That's how the prepaid postage works. If you're a campaign and you're sailing out mailings with a return envelope or something like that, the organizationally gets charged for those that are actually mailed. And we've got about 7 million registered voters, and I think that they're, the calculations that was done by the state to come up with that number uses the expected voter participation rate to come up with that estimate. But again, you're either paying because you're finding a stamp, or you're paying because the government's going to be prepaid postage. So, you know, you're paying either way. Probably a lot easier to just have those things prepaid.
Just joining me, I'm talking with Republican State Senator Joe Fain of the 47th Legislative District. We're talking about prepaid postage being handled by the state. It's an idea that King County just passed. It's going to go into effect, I believe, for the next election. Senator, was that the right move for King County? I know Secretary of State Kim Wyman, while she supports the idea, she was worried about one particular county doing it when the state is taking up this issue.
I think the Secretary of State is right to be concerned. Now, there have been cases where this has taken place in the past. I think that Pierce County, for a brief period of time, when they had the ranked choice voting primary, I think had prepaid postage. I think Garfield or another Eastern Washington County also had it for a brief period of time, this prepaid postage. I do worry about one county, particularly a very affluent county, doing that. I have a community that I represent. In fact, I live in the city of Auburn. Half of the city is in King County. Half of the city is in Pierce County. I do think that there will be a difference in voter participation rates based on whether or not there's prepaid postage. And so I just think that it makes a lot more sense, both financially as well as in equaling individuals' access to the ballot, if we just do this the same way across the state in a uniform manner.
Does this have bipartisan support? And if so, where is the $3 million for the project going to come from in the budget?
Well, I mean, we've got a 70-some billion-dollar budget over several biennium, and so coming up with the money to be able to fund this it shouldn't be the huge barrier. It does have bipartisan support. This is a proposal that I'll be sponsoring along with Senator Mark Mullett, the Democrat from Issaquah, who's spoken out in support of this. And I do think that there's bipartisan support for just the general idea of making it easier to access government, make it easier to use essential government services, and certainly making it easier for valid registered citizen voters to cast their vote.
Are you looking at this, assuming this passes, and this is my last question, do you look at this and will you judge whether or not it's successful based on voter turnout, or is it not going to be looked at beyond keeping making sure like the costs just don't get out of control? Like, is this a success just by passing it, or is it a success because of voter turnout?
Well, as someone that has also struggled to find a stamp in my drawer, and I know that's a lame excuse for a lot of folks, but it does create a barrier. I think just making it easier to get this done and off your plate so that you can get voted and not have the burden of finding the stamp, especially since it doesn't cost anymore, I think that's a success in and of itself. But I also think it would be more successful if we actually did see a meaningful increase, even if it's just a couple of percent in voter turnout. But I think the issue that everybody, especially politicians, need to be aware of is that changing the voting laws or prepaid postage or whatever, same-day registration, whatever we could dream up to make it easier for folks to vote, yes, that's important. We should do those things. But it's not the primary reason that so many Washingtonians aren't turning in their ballot, aren't participating in the franchise. And until we actually address those issues, meaningful increases in voter participation are going to elude us. And I think you're absolutely right to make that point.
Well, we'll see what ends up happening. Hopefully, more people will, in fact, vote. But I tend to be with you that this does not actually address the root causes of the apathy that we see. Again, I've been talking with State Senator Joe Fain, Republican from the 47th District. That's Auburn, Renton, Kent, Federal Way, Covington. We're talking about this idea that it seems like we've been talking for a while. It may actually come into fruition where your ballots will have prepaid postage on them, so no more hunting around for a stamp. Senator, thank you so much for joining me this morning. I appreciate it.
Appreciate it. Thanks, Jason.
Absolutely. If you think this is a good idea or a bad one, I'd love to hear from you. Send me a text, 1-800-465-877. That's 1-800-465-877. Good morning, everybody. Live from the Online Trading Academy studio, it's the Jason Rand Show. Don't forget, you can send me a text message at 1-800-465-877. In fact, if you text the word rant to that number, 1-800-465-8770, I'll go ahead and send you a link to my first article with the Daily Wire, dailywire.com. That is Ben Shapiro's website. They tapped me to cover the nonsense of the head tax happening here in Seattle with a focus on Shama Sawant, the Socialist Seattle council member. So if you want to read that story, just send me a text with the keyword RANTZ, R-A-N-T-Z, to the number 1-800-465-877. You'll go ahead and get that link. Thank you, as always, for tuning in and telling your friends about the show. I've got an update from Starbucks, if anyone's wondering. They now, after the issue in Philadelphia, they have changed their bathroom policy, which now ensures it's going to be much more difficult for Starbucks managers to kick out homeless people and drug users, because now anyone can use their bathrooms. It's an open bathroom policy, whereas in the past, they've kind of left it up to the individual managers to decide whether or not they're going to require someone make a purchase prior to using a Starbucks and a Starbucks bathroom. I don't know how wide that particular policy actually was, because I've gone into Starbucks and I've asked them for the code to use the bathroom before actually purchasing anything, and they never was like, are you going to purchase anything? I think the real reason they had that policy in place was if I showed up and I was clearly homeless and potentially a nuisance, they don't want me using their bathroom, which makes total sense. And so now they are getting rid of that, according to Howard Schultz. They're moving away from that policy. Also, they don't get in any more trouble. But this is just going to cause problems, I think, for the Starbucks, because I'm assuming you can still tell someone who is homeless or clearly drugged out of their mind or drunk like a crazy, like, you can still tell them to leave. But what if they just want to use the bathroom? It's going to cause another problem. You can look at me like that all you want. It's going to cause a problem. You know it is.
Yeah.
At some point, it's going to cause a problem. And then they're going to have to come up with a new policy. And I don't know what that, you know what the policy is going to end up being? It's going to be the policy of most places that are like, sort of like Subways do this a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Can't use the bathroom. No more public bathrooms. At some point, they're just going to take away the public bathroom aspect to it, which seems rather dangerous when you're serving beverages as the main form of your product.
Yeah, but that's also their product is that they are a space that people use for sometimes hours at a time to work on things. And so, I mean, people are
going to... You do have to buy. The one thing I've seen most people do, I don't know if they do it because they have to or because it's just the right thing to do. The people who camp out and do like their Skype webcam calls,
mm-hmm,
and they set up like a little mini office, I always see at least one cup from Starbucks on their table. So I don't know, though, if they do that because they just feel the need to give something back as they steal Wi-Fi and space for their personal business.
Well, you can also, I mean, I've also been to coffee shops where every 90 minutes you're supposed to buy something. Like, that's the limit, how long you're supposed to sit there.
How do they enforce that? Do they?
I don't know. I don't know.
I feel like half of these things they just say is a policy, but they don't actually do it. Because the majority of the people, if you know it's a policy, 99% of us are good people who will adhere to the policy. It's that 1% that ruins it for everybody else and causes a whole bunch of problems.
I mean, you can go to a library. Like, if all you need is a space to sit or pee, you can go to a library. I guess there's some other spaces.
Or a park.
You can't. Can you pee in a park?
Yeah, it happens all the time. I saw someone peeing in a park last week as I was walking on the weekend in Capitol Hill. I saw a dude just peeing on a tree.
I think that should be allowed. I think that should be
peeing
legal.
On trees?
Yeah, number one only, no number twos.
Why?
In public.
What's the argument?
Well, I guess if you're going to clean up after yourself, but I just think you should be able to. I'm out in public enough and needing to use the bathroom that I think it should just be legal to go on bushes and trees and shrubs, plants.
Do you have a tiny bladder?
Yes,
prostate
issues.
What I'm talking. Well, you go check that out. If you can't help but just pee all over the place, it's like a problem, man.
I'm just saying, I think it should be legal.
It is legal. It's called an adult diaper.
Yeah, I'm with Jacob. I do that all the time.
What's wrong with you people?
But I wasn't admitting to doing it all
I have.
Time.
That was implied, sir.
I was saying that I think I should be allowed to.
I have a Starbucks bathroom anecdote. I was in New York City, downtown towards the World Trade Center, and I was in a Starbucks bathroom that I went into to go pee, and I told Ashley to go buy something.
Okay.
And I was waiting in this line, and it was taking forever. It was probably like five people in line, and it was probably 15 minutes. And I was waiting for someone, because I'm from Seattle, to shyly go ask, like,
did you not knock?
The cashier. Yeah, hey, can you figure out what's going on here? And it was so long that I was really afraid it was going to be a dead body in there. And I was standing like right looking at where, if the door opened, I was going to be the first person who was going to see this dead body. But no one went over to the cashier, and I wasn't going to do it. And finally,
which is very Seattle, by the way.
A girl who was clearly a local went up to the door and just started pounding on it.
New York.
Like, hey, open up the door. And eventually, like, one of the employees heard this ruckus and came out and unlocked it.
There was no one in there.
And I was so, like, afraid that a dead body was going to fall out of the door and, like, land on me, and I was going to have to catch it. But yeah, there was
nobody. Catch it. There was, you wouldn't be responsible for catching it. Let it fall to the ground. What are you doing?
There was nobody in there.
Yeah, there was no. I knew it. How often have many of us been found in that exact same situation where you're just like kind of waiting, you're doing the little like hopping back and forth, it's gonna go so badly, and you're like, why is this person? And then it's, oh, they just open the door. There's no one in there.
I've formed lines on my own for bathrooms that were not single person bathrooms. Like, I just didn't realize, like, I like knocked on the door or something, didn't push on it, and it's just like a regular bathroom with lots of stalls, and I just didn't I didn't walk in. And so I'm just standing outside, and there's like a line forming behind me. And then eventually I realize, like, I just push on the door and it opens up.
Yep, that's me too.
You guys are the worst. I have to tell the story because we've got a minute left. I'll tell the more detailed story in the after show podcast, but it's bathroom related.
All right.
I was at a movie the other day, and you know how some children will pull their pants all the way down and stand at a urinal?
Yes.
Okay. I saw a version of that with a grown adult who, while didn't pull his pants all the way to the ground, had half of his butt showing at a urinal. And this was a grown man who seemed otherwise fine other than this particular bathroom habit.
Yeah.
The other details I cannot say on the radio, for which I will say on the After Show podcast, which you can subscribe to at ktth.com or on iTunes under Jason Rant Show. I wanted to take a photo because I didn't think anyone would believe me that an adult is doing this. And I had, for about 7 seconds, as I was walking by slowly because I was like shocked at what I was seeing, thinking, can I do this? Can I take the camera out and take the photo? But I can't. And so I didn't. And so I'm going to have to explain it in just very specific detail in the After Show podcast.
Paint us a picture.
I'll allow you one question as a follow-up.
Me?
Yeah.
Right now?
Yeah.
Was he wearing underwear?
If he was, I could not see
that.
Okay. I could see something else, though. Half of it.
What?
The backside. I said that already.
Yeah. You saw half the body.
Well,
I know that.
The underwear I didn't see.
Okay.
I mean, I'm assuming he was, I don't know. He was wearing jeans.
Yeah.
And almost nothing else. So we'll talk about it in the After Show podcast. It's the Jason Rancher.